Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters, and you never know, maybe a Twisted Mister or two. I hope everyone is having a good week so far. And hello, Naomi. How's it going?
Hello. Hi, Pam. How are you? Great. I'm great.
I'm doing great. Good to hear you. Looks like we have a nice lineup of poetry. A wonderful lineup, great prompts. You want to go ahead and tell us a little bit about your contest and the prompts you chose?
Yeah, well, I came across these three quotes that are filled with positivity. And, you know, just quotes that I just loved. You know, they're so profound and they're so, I don't know, they just touched me really deeply. And so the first prompt is by Elena Bonham Carter. She's an actress. She's there, you know, she has these quirky little roles all the time. She starred in Chocolate Factory, Alice in Wonderland, and other, I think she even I think she even stared in Annie. I'm not sure, but anyway. And Brooke Hampton, she's an author. And then the last one is by C.S. Laurie, and she's an author also, but she's known for her numerous quotes, you know, on life. So, yeah, just, you know, a show with about life and the outlook on life and just taking our time to enjoy our time on this planet and do the best and know what life is, what it means to us. And so I called it Life is Art because, you know, everything in life is meaningful. And if you just take the time and look around and, you know, just see what's out there, it could be nature, it could be anything, you know, just how it impacts us in our everyday lives, you know, every little thing that we do, every little thing that we see, every little gesture, every little everything, you know, just about life. So, so I hope. Yeah, I read a couple of the entries.
That's
and
awesome.
Yeah, we have a lot of poems out there. So I'm going to stop talking right now, and so we can get into this poetry.
Sounds good to me. Well, before we move forward, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bring on area code 703, which is one of two people, and I'm not quite sure which one. So, hello, 703, you're on the air.
Hello, this is 703. Glad to speak to you this evening.
Hey, Tom.
Tom.
Glad you could be here.
So glad to have you with us, Tom.
Oh, yep, there he is. All right, very cool, very cool. I would have known it was Tom had I been looking in the Night Poet, but I wasn't. Okay.
And I'll be perfect all the time.
I see you can stay around for at least for about an hour, Tom. So we'll get all we'll get our your piece up within the hour. We can.
Right.
I can hardly. Is it just me, or can I hardly hear Tom? Is there?
Yeah, you might need to adjust your headphones. It actually sounds like a duck quacking in the background.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, no ducks here.
Who knows? Being in the boonies, you never know what the antenna is.
Yeah, right. All right. Are we ready to move forward?
Yeah, I am. So are you going to be selecting the poems, Pam, or do you want me to, or whatever?
It's your show. It's your call. I'm fine either way.
Okay, well, if you want to put up the poems, then I put them in kind of a okay order. So we have two carryovers from the last show, Beyond the Image, and then we'll...
I saw that. All right, and first carryover from Beyond the Image is Ever-Changing Time by Devasish Verma. And Tom, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure.
And Tom, would you give that a read for us, please?
Ever-Changing Time by Devasish Verma. A thought crossed my weary mind, a twinge I felt at my heart, where hope is scarce, where place of rest is filled up with pop-up windows, selling chips and nuts and drinks and snacks, adding a long queue for ice cream packs. The decor is defined, flowers were readjusted, and the waterfalls are created. Mundane landscape is remodeled with jade and bonsai, with glass bricks and floral tiles. Here, time is less to feel. There is less patience for listening. Leaning over the glassed-in railing, they stand and stare. It is a kooky world where everybody wants to show to all who never bother to know. I stand at the stare of a fashionable mall, a perfect model of the latest gizmo. I see them all posing at every corner for high-tech photo. The Beyblades and Barbie teddy bear and soft puppy, the tickets for the ride, the coupons for the snack. All it was a high cost at the counter of happiness. When I try to buy, I behold a dashing generation coming up, triggering an onset of a new age formation. They are growing faster than their age, which is difficult to gauge. It may be good. They are entering the stage at an early age. Sun may scorch their skin. Dust may ruin their dress. And wind may mess up their hair. They are conscious. They are prepared to carry themselves through the crowded fair. They are aware. They are better placed than we were. Let's capture the trend. But there is a gap I try to fill up with left out innocence. Mid a ray of light coming all the way from the corner of an unshaped hole. I peep in and find her sitting all alone. I rush towards her and hug her tight. Tears roll down my cheeks. I was overwhelmed with joy. I am lucky to have her next to me in the moving crowd of unknown identity. End poem.
Oh, what an amazing read there, Tom. That was just fabulous. Yeah, this really, you know, it captures the chaotic movement of the life today, you know, the modern life and the joy of having somebody amidst all this turmoil, I guess. And, you know, I was stuck on, you know, of course, the imagery used and the, you know, everything that he pointed towards in this poem, you know, from the ice cream packs to the, you know, the brick and floral tiles to the, you know, the everything that's people taking high-tech photos, the Beyblades, the Barbie, the teddy bears, the soft puppies, the tickets for the rides. I mean, you know, this is really such concise writing, you know. He brings in so many amazing details around. But, you know, the sentences that struck me was about the youth. You know, it may be good they are entering the stage at an early age, you know, which is difficult to gauge. They are growing faster than their age. And I see that, you know, in the young people today, you know, with internet, with all the social media and everything, they seem to be growing up, you know, so fast and sometimes without that, you know, that innocence that he states here. I try to fill up with left out innocence. It's as if they know so much and they're, you know, where is all that innocence, you know, that you know, it's I don't know. It's, you know, it's kind of sad a bit. But, I mean, yeah, our youth is growing up so fast. And, you know, I see it in my granddaughter, how she's affected with all the social media and all the TikTok and whatever, all the videos and everything. And yeah, they're growing up too fast, our youth today. What did you think, Pam?
I have to agree with what you said about our youth growing too fast today. You know, I do wish that I do wish that Devish would put what prompt you wrote to in our contest when he enters them, because it makes it easier to connect the right to the prompt. Mm-hmm. However, I can see how this one does work with Okay, I'm sorry. Hold on. All right, so I can see how this one does work with the prompts and the chosen art. I did like his use of imagery, and I like how he talks about the gap between generations. And I don't know if this one is necessarily about a romantic, you know, I almost get the impression from the things he said before and, you know, the... the person who he embraces and gets all cheerful about is actually his daughter. And this is being here at the mall is his way of trying to connect with her. And I could be wrong about that, but I kind of get that impression. But there definitely is a wonderful sense of connection amongst all the distance between the generations. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Oh, yeah, that is an awesome observation there, Pam. Yeah, it could be his daughter. Now that I reread those last few lines there, I kind of go along with your conclusion there. And Tom, you read that so amazingly well. What are your thoughts?
To me, it's like, first of all, the opening reminds me so much of the excitement of going into a mall, going into a new place, of seeing things, doing things, being in places. And also at the same time, she's capturing so well how they are creating a whole new environment these days to get you to go to the malls, to get you to go to those places and get involved in the technology. The second part, when we're in that second part where she goes, they're growing faster than their age, it's difficult to gauge. I'm reminded of the fact that most of us grew up learning about computers and learning how to use computers and translating the world of our parents into what you did with a computer. But it wasn't like we swam in it. It was more like we were learning how to be part of it and getting caught up. And do we want to get the newest gizmo? Do we want to have the newest app? It wasn't something that was like part of our environment. It was something that we were introducing into our environment. And she's catching really, really well the feeling, the power of living and breathing this commercial consumerist chaos, which has been there for a while with the Beyblades and Barbie and teddy bear and soft puppy, but also the sense of being part of a huge universe, which in a sense robs you of your innocence. But at the very end, I was touched was because suddenly in the midst of all of this technology, all of this newness, this, I peep and find her sitting all alone. And aren't we, technology, all alone, regardless of the TikToks and the Instagrams and the Twitters and everything else, if all you're doing is pumping into your PC or smartphone information, whose hand are you holding? Nobody's.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you with? No one. And to suddenly find someone, whether it's a daughter, a friend, just anyone to be with, that it really, I love those letters. I am lucky to have her next to me in the moving crowd of unknown identity. Because how many people do you know by sight, regardless of all the thousands that track you on whatever social medium you use? Who can you touch? And that's what I thought was really powerful about the ending industry.
Awesome comment there, Tom, and a great observation. Wow, yeah, that's true, you know, all the social media out there today, you know, and Facebook and everything, and, you know, you have all these friends on Facebook, but you don't see any of them most of the time, so true, you know, and it's true for the young ones, too. I think our youth growing up, you know, if I take my granddaughter, she feels so alone sometimes, I think, in this vast, this vastness of all this technology and everything. So great, great comment there, Tom. And Pam, do we have another caller?
We do not, no. So, whenever you're ready, we can move on to the next right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Up next, we have Deep Scars by Lil Lulu and Naomi. Go ahead and give that a read, please.
Okay. Deep Scars by Lil Lulu. Deep scars. Time and love help heal most wounds. But when marks are punctured deep, the scabbed edges on occasion rise and cause tender hearts to weep. The gravest wounds may never heal. Deep scar tissue forever remain. Though it may fade to the naked eye, there are easily reopened again. A toxic wound festers inside, a hurt never fully healed, easily reopening a bleeding heart. No amount of protection can shield. Poisonous wounds are reawakened. A secure bandage will not adhere. The heart will open, squeezing tight, and the hurting comes out in tears. Vulnerable pain undefended will expose the gaping wound. The ache becomes a part of you. You're fearful it will consume. If an injured wound can't be repaired, then your heart gravely at stake. You know the rawness will ooze and worsen. The heart becomes a constant ache. Surgery cannot remedy the wounds of a damaged heart. You can't survive another deep scar because the pain will tear you apart. That is when it is time to move on as a way to keep your heart intact before once again your heart is broken. You're forced to turn your back. End poem. Very thought-provoking, emotive write. You know, excellently written here by Little Lulu. Wow, you know, deep scars. And, she wrote to the image number 2 on that contest, which was... image number 2. Okay, yeah, the girl pulling out the part of the heart of the guy and just cutting it. So, you know, it's probably talking about a relationship here that is, you know, just wrong. And, you know, it's time to move on from this relationship, you know, that's because your heart is wide open. It's oozing and it's a constant ache. So it's time to, like she says, that is when it is time to move on as a way to keep your heart intact. Just an awesome, awesome write here by Little Lulu. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, this one really... The first thing I felt when I heard it was fear, because once you've been deeply hurt, there is a great fear about being hurt again. Because for some, instead of growing stronger and more experienced and wiser from the things that don't work or the way that you've been hurt or the way you had, in a sense, your innocence about love stolen from you by some clod, some people don't regain their balance, and some people don't overcome their fear of being hurt like that again, because they really don't know how to let their trust flourish, I guess mm-hmm. you could say, because trust plays such a real large part in it. Vulnerable pain, undefended, will expose the gaping wound. Vague becomes a part of you. You're fearful it will consume. To me, that was really sort of the crux of the whole piece, what you call the fulcrum that it rested upon. And it what impressed me with most with it was she wasn't overly dramatic, overly maudlin. She didn't beat the idea of death. She just very carefully took you down the corridors of someone who wants to love again, would love to love again, but doesn't know how.
Mm-hmm. Great comment there. Great observations there, Tom. Amazing comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was a beautiful, heartfelt, and emotive poem. Before I continue on with my comment, I would like to let you know that Gray has joined us. So welcome, Gray. Glad you could be here.
Thank you.
Hello, Gray. So happy
Hi,
to
Naomi.
Have you.
Hi Thomas.
Hi.
All right. Yeah, I really like how this flowed really nicely. It had a good rhyme to it. I like how the main message is the idea that, you know, words hurt just as much as physical injuries. You know, I really got the idea of walking away from somebody because they continue to be emotionally abusive. And I like how she acknowledges that time and love help heal most wounds. But, you know, as she says, when marks are punctured deep, the scabbed edges on occasion rise and cause tender hearts to weep. And that is so true. And I like how she talks about toxicity, you know, a toxic wound festers inside. And it's difficult because, you know, people think that different hurts, different pain and wounds are going to heal the same way, but they're not. And, you know, I like that in a very smart way, she points out that truth, that, yeah, time and love do help. But sometimes the wounds are so deep, they keep festering up. And there's a real great acknowledgement of the work that it takes to heal. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, so true. Awesome comment there, Pam. And Gray, did you get a chance to hear that write?
I did, yeah. You know, it was a very heart emotive, right? You know, it really tugs on the heartstrings for people that suffer these almost life-threatening injuries to their heart and to their soul through a relationship, I believe, as well. But, you know, it's a fascinating write. Well done and well read.
Mm-hmm. Awesome comment there, Gray. And Pam, where are you taking us next?
All right, I'll grab the next one, and all right, up next we have Under the Shade of a Tree by Uma 71, and it goes like this. How the tree stands in front and the sun behind, rising to the occasion like a theatrical urn, each branch a swinging ray of split second energized, sends leaves twirling, trailing behind the breeze, hinged like green ballerinas, arabesque on one heel, tilting in a brevet to left then right, shadows on grass stir like strokes of breath, on canvas of stillness, an art that sun and wind and grass an art that sun and wind and grass aren't the aware of creating under the mute rudeness of life and poem.
Oh, this is just beautiful. I mean, you know, it's so soft and it's so powerful at the same time. Just amazing. Like Yuma can write. She writes so beautifully with this ease. It's like it's effortlessly, but so such a powerful and amazing right here. And I'll comment farther, but Gray, your thoughts on this poem?
You know, I agree with the thought behind this, that life is art and everything, including, you know, the way you hold your key and the way you party. And, you know, it really is engaging, you know, in its appeal to seeing life as an art form and everything in it as art. An art that sun and wind and grass aren't aware of creating under the mute rootedness of life. You know, they're just existing, but they are art living as well. So just a beautiful poem. Excellent read as well, mm-hmm. Pam.
Absolutely. Amazing comment there, Gray. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, you know, in the way she brings this forward, how the tree stands in front and the sun behind, rising to the occasion like a theatrical urn. And therein, this sitter, how much is nature truly conscious of being art, and how much is the art really our ability to see it as art and appreciate it as art, and be really caught up and write the poem that is so artful, that says everything there. This is really one of those really nice pieces of reflection, because in reflecting what is being seen in the context of seeing it, she creates our awareness of the art before us by being artful. I really like this. This has just a real nice reflective level of different layers bouncing off of each other in their reflection of what is and how we are about how it is, the way it is. Really nicely done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And nicely done indeed. And you know, it's neat that I don't think she chose the tree for nothing, you know, under the shade of a tree, because, you know, you always refer as the tree as being life, you know, the tree of life. And I think that she chose the tree because of that, you know, it reflects life. It's the symbol of life, a tree there. Awesome right here. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. Love to share my thoughts. Beautiful poem. You know, I love her use of nature imagery. I like how she talks about how nature creates art. And there is something so beautiful and so profound about trees. And I like how she captures the imagery of the branches and the movement of the branches within the ballet terms, you know, that's the second and third stanzas of this poem are particularly my favorite, with the sense of movement within the imagery. So very well done. And Naomi, I did want to let you know that Bobby has joined us. So welcome, Bobby.
Oh.
Glad you could be here.
Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
Hello, we're having a party tonight. Thank you for being here. Awesome. So are we ready to put up the next poem, Pam? Or did you hear that last poem?
I did. This is beautiful. It's a really pastoral. It is a reverence of nature and how nature is in itself art, uncalculated, unbribed, and it's just beautiful. Matter of fact, I wrote one time, I can't remember the whole haiku I did, but I wrote, my last line was, nature paints Monet. And that's
amazing.
When you look, you see that, you see art, and it's beautiful. I myself am a real fan of flowers and trees and nature, and just standing and listening to a bird. So this is a really a delicate piece of work. It almost reminds me of Selwa's work. Delicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does have a soft delicateness to it. So true. Awesome comment there, Bobby. And awesome write to Ma. Thank you so much. And Pam, where does that take us next?
All right. Well, up next we have we have Besame Mucho by Louie Wildove. And Gray, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Okay, sure. Besame Mucho by Louie Wildove. Breathing, dawns of citrus morn, crisp air, longing, steaming cups whipped chocolate, smelling fingers, twirling curled waves, intoxicating scents, remembering, engorged lips, pressing, time evaporates, kissing eyes closed, tracing poetry, moaning thoughts, booming, climbing, blushing, rose pinkness, flushed cheeks, tasting, swirling, cool mint sips, mouth waters in ecstasy. Besame fuerte, como así está puro nuestro último beso. End of poem.
Awesome read there. And an awesome write by our Luyu here. And, you know, the translation of that last sentence she put in, kiss me hard as if this was our last kiss. And, you know, it's so beautiful, the movement, the movement throughout the whole poem, but also, you know, the little moments that she took and with each little stanza here. And, you know, she highlighted those little moments so beautifully, breathing dawns of citrus morn, crisp air, citrus morn. You know, Louie has this way of writing that just so beautiful. And Pam, I'll let you go first.
Well, I really like this one. It's got a beautiful sensuality to it. And it fits so well with the idea that art is life. I like mm-hmm. how it's all about those things that we drink, those things that we enjoy, you know, by, you know, just taking it all in. I love the mention of the steaming cups of whipped chocolate and swirling cool mint sips, mouth waters in ecstasy. That last part makes me think of like drinking mojitos. And I really just, like I said, beautiful sensuality. I really like smelling fingers, twirling curled waves, intoxicating scents, because it brings in the whole experience of enjoyment, not just by, you know, mentioning imagery, but also by mentioning the things that we smell and the things that we taste. So great read there, Gray, and this is beautifully written and very well done, Lou.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, indeed. And Bobby, your thoughts?
Admiring the way she formatted breathing, longing, smelling, remembering, kissing, blooming, verbs, tasting, and the way that each one is punctuated, breathing dawns of citrus morn, crisp air, longing, steaming cups of whipped chocolate, the very sensory and laden and textured piece that it really does walk you through different sensations and carries you through it, and it just it has a romanticism to it, but it is, how shall I say this, it's like inhaling a rose. It is just so beautifully, it's almost like it's nature's kiss. It's beautiful. It really is a lovely, and the ending, Bésame fuerte como si este fuera nuestro último beso, is just beautiful way to end it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just an amazing, amazing piece. Amazing comment there, Bobby. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with Bobby. The structure, the formatting of it, the way it has been put together makes it build on itself, because
yes,
she defined them or explained those single word phrases and said she opens them up, lets them suddenly expand and become greater than they were before, and makes you experience them. And in experiencing them, I'm part of the poem itself, almost as if you are experiencing along with her by the time you hit the third one, you know, smelling, fingers twirling, curled waves, intoxicating scents, remembering, engorged lips, pressing, time, evaporate. At that point, you are... You either stop reading this poem because it just doesn't work for you, which makes you a pretty insensitive clod, or you are completely caught up in the pleasure and already hooking up into your own mind a memory of something similar, saying just as good, maybe better, full of hope, so that when you hit that last line, you're absolutely right there, ready for it, and hey ho, let's go. You know, it's that powerful a piece, and I am just doing it with such nice, crisp, short little phrases that build one on top of the other so beautifully. It's just a stunning way to pull it off.
Mm-hmm. Amazing comment there. And I just looked up Besame Mucho, and it means kiss me a lot. So what an amazing title for the poem, you know. And Gray, you read that. Pardon me, Bobby?
There was a song from the 60s called Besame Mucho.
Oh, okay. Yeah, awesome. And Gray, your thoughts on you? That was an amazing read, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I thought it was fantastic. I really liked her use of language. You know, she has a way of dancing with words that's quite enchanting, and just a beautiful, beautiful poem full of love and reverence.
Mm-hmm. Dancing with words, that's awesome. That's exactly it, you know. Lu Yu has a way of dancing with words. Just amazing, amazing comment there, Gray. And Pam, so where does that take us next?
All right. Up next we have your poem, Bobby. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay, give me a moment here. My phone has done something strange. Okay, there we go. It likes to play music to me, whether I want it to or not. Okay, That's all right. You know, it's a benign spirit. I usually keep it under control. Okay. This is called Life's Mosaic. It's a Sanrio chain. If the stick you hold has something to say to you, hearken to its tale. If a stone's story, however small, has meaning, then it's worth hearing. Falling leaves whisper of life, glorious summer, death, then share this drama. Sunshine and starlight, the narrative of rain, the fable of sky, a street musician, the small town where you grew up, your favorite friends, things you remember, things you wish you could forget, half-forgotten dreams, sharing a first kiss, the agonies of first love, details of your life. Poetry abounds, but to hear, you must listen to the chronicler. You are the author, biographer of all things, if you but listen. End poem.
Awesome, 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 Bobby. Yeah, you are the author, biographer of all things, if you but listen. And, you know, what stuck out to me, you know, this is just amazing. Another poet that can dance with words. But, you know, the half-forgotten dreams. Oh, my gracious, you know, how often do we have those half-forgotten dreams and we wake up and, you know, we have the emotion, we have a few memories, but we can't just get all of it together and, you know, the half-forgotten dreams. But I think half-forgotten dreams can be the dreams that, you know, in our life too. But, you know, I don't know why, but I just zeroed in on that half-forgotten dreams. But this is just amazing all throughout, all the little things in life that you zeroed in on. And, Gray, your thoughts?
You did a beautiful read on this, Bobby. And, I mean, the poem's insightful, hard-hitting, impactful, deeply engaging. You know, it has an excellent flow to it as well. I really like the send routine that you used. It turned out beautifully. And, you know, this reminds me of, I had a piece of firewood that I brought down off the mountainside, and it was big. It was 3 feet high by 4 feet wide and red cedar. And I brought it in that shape. I didn't split it because I wanted to carve it. And I spent, I don't know, probably 6 months with that piece before I finally saw the bear that resided inside of it. And then I finished that bear, and it paid my rent for a couple of months. So that was a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's there if you learn how to look.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. I didn't know you carved wood, Gray. That's awesome. Bobby, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Oh, I'm sorry I interrupted you. You're the host.
No, go ahead.
I was just remarking how I understood what he meant when he said he had to see the bear that dwelled in the piece of wood. I've experienced the same thing myself. I make jewelry, but I do it from vintage pieces. And sometimes you just lay the stones out on the table, and you just have to put them in. And I had some pieces. So I do lamp work also, and I had made some beautiful beads, but I just couldn't figure out how I wanted the composition to go. So I stuck them in my work tray, and I was reading a book by another artist, and she gave me a phrase that has just ignited my imagination, and she said, personality over perfection. And when I read that, I went rushing down into my studio, dragged that tray out, and an hour and a half I had a necklace. Because I hadn't seen it until I read what she wrote. And then all of a sudden it was there in front of me.
No.
So I understand it completely.
It's awesome. And Tom, your thoughts?
I mean, you know what? Excuse me. Let me get my voice back here. So much of art is in being present to it. It's like when I start to write a poem, I go into a kind of meditation, waiting to hear that first line that sort of opens the door to everything else I'm trying to say. And this catches so well about how you're sensitive to, you feel, you are touched by, moved. You know, as a musician in the small town where you grew up, your favorite friends, things you remember, things you wish you could forget, half-forgotten dreams, they're all part and piece of the same whole. And sometimes it's like I put together things like, you know, I'm building a Murphy bed right now, but I've a lot of other stuff. And it's not possible to work a lot of times to do these things until you're in a place where you're ready to listen and be present for what you're doing, because if you're just banging nails through boards and shoving up walls, it's a job. It's not art. And if you're trying to create something that has meaning, you have to listen to what you're doing and be present the entire time. And I'll stop and walk away from the job when I can't be that way anymore. I mean, this is a striking piece because it speaks directly to how much you have to not only wake up to everyone around you, you have to wake up to yourself. And I love that last line. That finishes it perfectly. You are the author, biographer of all things if you but listen. That's perfect. That just brings the whole piece right where it belongs.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Indeed. Awesome comment there. Tom. And, okay, I'm all mixed up here. Pam, did I ask you to comment?
Not yet, because I was, I wasn't the one who read it. It was Bobby's poem, but no, not yet. This is absolutely beautiful. I love that you made it into a senru chain. And to me, that makes sense because, you know, with the title being Life's a Mosaic, and you took a smaller, a brevity form of poem and put it into a chain to create a bigger picture. And a mosaic is what life is. It really is all about getting the beauty out of all the small moments, out of all the small stories. I did like the idea of being connected with nature, but it's more than being connected with nature. It's about being connected with the environment around you, from nature to the street musician, to even looking back at your that first kiss, or on the idea of when you're a poet, when you're an artist, you take time to listen before you move forward with the work. This is beautiful all the way through, but I really did like Sunshine and Starlight, the narrative of rain, the fable of sky, and then the next one, a street musician, the small town where you grew up, your favorite friends. All of those are people and times and places that made up the bigger picture of our lives. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Yeah, awesome, awesome, right? Awesome comment and awesome, awesome, right there, Bobby. Amazing. And Gray, your thoughts? Oh, I asked you, Gray. I guess I asked everybody, eh? So Pam, we can go on to the next poem.
All right. Well, the next poem I had put up was Tom's, and I am going to repost it because it got a little buried, which is absolutely fine because I like seeing an active late night poets room. And so there you go, Tom. Your poem is up. Give it a read for us, please.
All right. You had to be there. There are many, meaning I really have no idea how many or what number, who have theories about being in the moment, what spiritual magic really is. Yet they have never experienced it for themselves. Oh, do they want to? Like most things in life, what is happens? When it's rain, you get wet. All the science doesn't change the experience. Everything you make up about it doesn't change the event. Weather is weather. It is not about you. It doesn't really matter how personally you take it. Easier to be present when things are still. Meditation, the silence of still night, an empty road, and you have been hitchhiking for hours. There, on the side of a two-lane road, cows in the meadow, monarchs on Queen Anne's lace, dust rising up quickly to fall down. When the rare car that doesn't care about you goes by, the moment takes you. The time stretches to forever, as if coming to a stop, a long time to break. The clarity of this dry, dull, roasting day fills you with its brilliance. Then it is gone, and the next car stops and gives you a ride. You get in, and the driver takes you where you are going. Thanks you for letting them give you a ride. It never happens again, but you know, you can't make it. Magic is a gift.
And oh, what an amazing right there, Tom. So profound, you know, so spiritual in a way. And it's true, you have to make, you know, it never happens again, but you know, you can't make it. Magic is a gift. And you know, your extended metaphor of you know, hitching a ride there, getting a ride, seeing the cars go by. Just amazing, amazing ride all the way through. Gray, your thoughts on Thomas Wright? Hello, Gray?
Yes, I was halfway through my comment. Sorry about that. Fantastic read, Thomas. And, you know, the poem is deeply engaging, and it really pulls you through the right with your style. The storyline of being a hitchhiker on the road for hours under the hot sun, and, you know, and then the dust rising up quickly to quickly fall down. When the rare car that doesn't care about you goes by. And then magically this car appears and, you know, thanks you for letting them give you a ride, which is absolutely brilliant. And I really like, you know, the truth in the last sentence, the last couplet where it says, it never happens again, but you can't make it. Magic is a gift. So, yeah, beautiful write on the subject of magic and its role in our life.
Mm-hmm. Awesome comment there, Gray. And Bobby, your thoughts?
I like the fact that Tom took hitchhiking as an allegorical expression of life. As we're passing down the road, waiting for a ride, we're going through life, sometimes in the moment, sometimes not. One of the phrases I really don't like, killing time. Killing time should be a capital offense, because time is something that you can't recover once it's gone. And I think we forget that. But he's brought us down the road through life and observing what's around us until we're brought back to that moment when a car drives by us and rouses us from our reverie. But it's interesting because again, you can get lost in the moment, and each moment is in itself a miracle, and it's a moment to enjoy because you don't get it back.
Mm-hmm. Awesomely well said there. Awesomely well said there, Bobby. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a beautiful write. I have to agree with Bobby that, you know, every moment is definitely a gift, a blessing. I like that you mentioned that in your end line, Tom, magic is a gift. You know, there's so much about life to embrace and appreciate, and it doesn't have to be just the moments that we are standing still or sitting still. You know, it especially can be the moments where we're moving, forward, where we're, you know, appreciating what's going on around us. And I like how there is that spiritual element to this and a very philosophical approach. And it's beautiful all the way through, but second to last stanza, the longest one with the imagery of monarchs on Queen Anne's lace, dust rising up to quickly fall down when the rare car that doesn't care about you goes by. And you're just so swept up in that moment of walking along, like the reader gets caught up in that moment of walking alongside you on that dusty road by yourself, looking around, seeing what's going on and just appreciating it rather than being so concerned about getting somewhere. It's about really enjoying the journey. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome, awesome right there. Very philosophical, you know, and very profound, Tom. You know, thank you so much for bringing this right in, you know, tonight. Just amazing, amazing right. And Pam, where does that take us next?
All right. Up next, we have Summertime Blues by Arliss D. And Naomi, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Summertime blues, head cradled happily in hands, elbows propped on wooden table, windows bend with the winds. Thunderheads roam the sky, if only I could write again. Deluge presses against glass, seeping through each glorious crack. Poems and books thrust and pack, clothes gather in the dark. If only I could start anew. Desert spreads throughout my head. Segrego cacti sway as one. Great dunes of sand scatter abroad. Mounds mount on threshold of my door. If only I could grind them with my teeth. Mountains hold sacred secrets behind lofty facades of stone. I have climbed them without sun, rugged sentinel of time, if only I could retrieve the past. Time presses on without a plan, caught in a vice, we twist, moan, pale juice from the grape spills into vats, waiting to be steered, if only I could toast summer's end. Soon leaves will blush in new colors, soon days will fade into strata of gray, seasons change, trying to make it new. Pages of my book curl up and die. If only I could read the map toward home. End poem. Oh, wow. It's really touched me, this poem. Bobby, I'm going to get you to comment first.
I really enjoyed the visual imagery. It's very expressive. You can see what's happening. Saguaro cactus are in the Sonora Desert. I never lived in the Sonora. I lived in the Mojave, which has the Joshua trees. But you still, what's remarkable about the desert is it has an aroma. And as I was listening to the read, I had that aroma come back to me. Great dunes of sand scattered abroad, mounds mount on threshold of my door. If only I could grind them with my teeth. And you do. You get the sand is everywhere. And by the way, the saguaro grows nowhere else in the world except the Sonora Desert, which I find remarkable. And the mountains, the closeness to the desert, I feel that too, because I've lived in this environment, and time presses on without a plan. You do get that sense of eternity in the desert, and even in the spring when it rains, it says days will fade into strata of gray. You still get the life. The desert coming to life. If only I could toast summer's end. It's melancholy. It's like you don't want it to end. And if only I could read the map toward home. That is, it's sad. Like he likes where he is, but there's something missing. But the imagery of the desert is so vivid, especially to me. I just really enjoyed that capture in here.
Mhm. Yeah, stunning right here. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. Amazing imagery. I like how he brings to us, as Bobby was mentioning, the imagery of the desert. And it talks about how in the desert, it's not just about the emptiness. There are those periods of blooming, those periods of life. But there's also these periods of dryness. You know, it almost reminds me of the whole idea of writing itself. Like sometimes we're nothing but deserts, and other times the words just kind of bloom and flourish in the rainy season. Thank you. Yeah, I really like how he says desert spreads throughout my head, and mention of the saguaro cacti sway as one, and then the next stanza, mountains hold sacred secrets behind lofty facades of stone. Those are just absolutely brilliant and lines and very well done. And just to let you know that Sucker for the Treadmill has joined us. Welcome, Sucker. Glad you could be here.
Thank you for joining us.
Hey, guys. I actually am too tired to comment tonight. Had a long week at work, but my computer shut down the website, so I just called him to continue listening. But so grateful to be here. Beautiful work tonight.
Sure.
Incredible.
No problem. All right. I'll go ahead and put you on mute, and if you decide that you want to join in, just go ahead and message me on All Poetry.
Thanks, Paul.
All right.
Okay. Was that where you finished commenting, Pam? Yeah. That was a great.
Yeah.
That was a great observation that you made there. You know, to compare this with writing. When we go through dry patches and other times the words just flow. I just thought that was just amazing thought there. And Thomas, is Thomas still with us?
Yeah. I really like
your thought.
I really like this piece because the way he starts it with head cradled happily in hands. Elbows propped on wooden table, window bend with the wind, underheads roam the sky. If only I could write again. There's a sense of needing to move, of things coming in. The deluge presses against the grass, the glass, seeping through each glorious crack. Homes and books thrust and pack, clothes gather in the dark. If only I could start anew. There's this longing, this feeling of things that change. And then we move into the desert and the mountains, and time comes at you. And each time he finds himself looking for a new way to somehow experience it, move on from it. Only I could retrieve the past. And he tugs at all sorts of emotional strings of the ways we pitch and poke and peer when we're trying to really get clear about what it is we want. Do we want to create? Do we want to write? Do we want to be somebody in a certain way? We just want to love someone and let them know. So that when we get to those last lines, some leaves will blush in new colors. Soon days will fade into strata of day. Seasons change, trying to make it new. Pages of my book curl up and die. If only I could read the map towards home, as if I have allowed myself to stray too far away from all the things that really make me me. Therein is the problem. Therein is why I feel.
Oh, that's an awesome observation there, Tom. You always have the greatest comments. This is amazing. And Pam. So what will be our next piece?
All right. Our next piece will be This Side of Heaven by Fran Marie. And it goes like this. I hate poetry because I love it more than anything. Its sweet tones invade my sleep with warm visions of artistic nature, like an assembled symphony tucked away waiting to release, a sonata of layered art, one note tumbling into the next, vertical words whispering, musical wonderment, building from a blank sheet, climbing upon one another to a towering, glorious expanse, completing its composition of elevating elements, the sun, moon, and sparkling night stars. Smooth sounds wrap me in rapture, and art defining my center core of life, breathing air to poet's sensitive spirit. Poetry is simply life's written art and this side of heaven. And poem.
Oh, that was an amazing, amazing read there, Pam. And, you know, I hate poetry because I love it more than anything. That's quite a statement there when you're opening up that poem, you know. I hate poetry because I love it more than anything. It brings out maybe because it brings out all the emotion. It brings out everything, you know. It can bring out the, you know, even the sadness. and in throughout life, and you know, all the different the sides of you that sometimes you don't want to see, but that can be interpreted in different ways, and I can't wait to hear, you know, what you guys have to say, the comments that you'll have on this poem. So I'm going to start right away, but with Thomas, I'm going to put you to work.
Oh, Tom had to go, so it's me, you, and Bobby.
Oh, Tom
now.
Had to go. Oh, okay. Well, good night, Tom. And so, Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this. It is it captures, I think, the sense that the indescribable sense we all as writers engage in and entertain at points in our writing, where all of a sudden the miracle of the words. They start arranging themselves on the page, and things start tumbling out of your consciousness faster than you can keep up with them. And like she says, vertical words, whispering musical wonderment, building from a blank sheet, climbing upon one another to a towering, glorious expanse, completing its composition. That center stanza just it defines it. And who among us has written something and then stepped away from it like an artist steps away from their easel and reads it and rereads it and all goes back to something we've written in the past, and you look at it and go, damn, this is good. Did I write this? You know? and you have this wonder all over again of the miracle of the creativity that if you had been any other place in any other moment, entertaining any other thoughts, that miracle would have never occurred on the paper or on the computer or what have you. And you go back, and it's like a photograph of a special moment where you look back at this piece of poetry and you go, you're in awe of yourself. And how did I come up with this? You know, and I think that's what I'm feeling from that center stanza. Is like an assembled symphony tucked away, waiting to release a sonata of layered art, one note tumbling into the next. And this is the whole thing from start to finish. It is just a wonderful, I would say it is a precise emotional expression of how we feel when we write something that exceeds our expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome observation there. So true. You know, sometimes I go back to a piece. I have my favorite pieces, and, you know, I think that my favorite pieces are the ones that come from deep, deep, deep inside, and they just flowed. But, I agree. Sometimes we look at some of the writing and we say, oh, wow, you know, I can't believe that I just wrote this. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a wonderful poem. I like how she writes about how poetry is a form of music. Poetry is a form of art that speaks to our soul and connects the bits and pieces of our lives together. I do like that opening line. It grabs your attention, and it really speaks to me on the whole love-hate relationship that you can have with something that you become obsessed with, that takes over your life in a beautiful way, but yet still it takes over your life. It takes over your mind. I really like the way the lines flow, and smooth sounds wrap me in rapture and art, defining my center core of life. Wonderful lines there, beautifully written and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful book right here by Fran Marie. Thank you so, so much for sharing this and writing for the contest. So, so appreciate it. And Pam, where does that take us next?
All right. Well, next we have, and I'm going to guess here that he was trying to spell cabaret, though I'm not 100% sure. So we either have Life is a Cabaret, My Dear, or Life is a Cabrera, My Dear, by Doc Frank. And whatever it is, Bobby, you go ahead and read it.
Shall I sing it?
Go for it. I don't think it's a song.
Drive away whatever audience we still have. Let's see, Cabrera. Really. I'm trying to figure out what a Cabrera is. Okay. Life is a Cabrera, my friend. Oh, waking up glorious, taking that first step God-given, seeing the sun rise over Blue Ridge, glorious. Kiss wife, scratch dog, acts of love. Read emails from our four grandchildren, from our four children treasures, hearing from 9 grandkids, a gift from tomorrow, playing with our 2 great, indescribable, brisk walk, neighborhood healthy. Meals, energy, AP overnight words, a joy. Entering 5 contests sharpens gray matter, penning 5 more, a pleasure. After having a CABG+4, I think that's a bypass. I'm not sure. I'll have to look it up. Arthritis and bursitis, every day a blessing. Disapprove adage, back goes out more than me. Netflix movie with Danielle, exciting. Life is a journey of positivity. Doctor visits, meds boosters, check just published poetry book reviews. Global marketing to spread my words. Most rewarding is helping needy. Lifetime learning never ends. Sadly, watching TV news, usually downer. Bedtime, 30 minutes after waking in recliner. But seriously, good night's sleep, beautiful prelude to another day of artistic pleasure. End poem.
I just love this, you know, and the picture too. You know, I'm guessing that's all his family there. Just amazing, amazing write here by Doc Frank. This is the first time I've read really one of his longer pieces, I guess. And he just packed in so many joyful parts of, you know, what's truly important in life, you know. It's, you know, the family and you know, all the little, the aches and all the things you go through, you know, like when you get older in life, you know, and a great nod to life itself here in this piece. So just amazing. Pam, what did you think of Doc Frank's write?
Oh, I really enjoyed this one. I like that he wrote a longer one. That's a beautiful family photo. And I like how this poem really touches my heart, how he mentions the children, mm-hmm. the grandchildren, and 2 great-grandchildren. What an absolute blessing. Then he brings us into, you know, how even taking time to write poetry and read poetry in itself is a way to, you know, find gifts in life. And after that, of course, you know, before that, you know, he does mention, you know, medical issues, physical ailments. And, I like that he brings those up because of the fact that it teaches us that we can appreciate and enjoy life even when we are dealing with physical ailments, sometimes even more so. sometimes it's having our bodies at times fail us that make us more aware of how beautiful life is. So excellent write and very well done.
Mm-hmm. You know, this was, you know, profound that it, and so stunningly emotive, but it was uplifting too, I found. You know, such an uplifting poem. I just really loved it. Bobby, your thoughts. Did I ask you? Yeah, no. No, not yet, eh?
Oh, I read it. That's why
you read it. Yeah, amazing read there, Bobby.
Yeah. I also like the family portrait at the top. It is very very touching and very realistic. I mean, you look at it and that's and I especially enjoy it because I don't have that. I'm an orphan. I have no living family, and so it's to see something like that. I marvel at extended families, you know, grandparents and grandkids and cousins and nieces and nephews and uncles and what have you, that they're sprawling all over the place like tentacles. And the way he talks about just the simple things, the weather, sunrise, eating, the fact that he's grateful to have lived through a bypass, it captures the essence of, you know, if you're awake, you have something to be grateful for. Or if you're alive, you have something to be grateful for. If you look at life, but again, because more people, so many people, you've got the comparison of glass half empty and glass half full. And my mom, it's a great negative example. With my mom, the glass was half empty. It had a leak and the water was contaminated. You know, and it's exhausting. When you're around people like that, but this positivity that he's got in here is just so buoyant, and it indicates clearly how much he enjoys every waking moment.
Mhm. Yeah, and you know, I always say, you know, if I have four kids and now four grandkids, and you know, they make up for a great, you know, great parties and great Christmases and great everything's, but sometimes it can be exhausting too. But you know, family is so important, and I just love the way he put that forward in this right here. So bravo, Doc Frank, amazing right here. And Pam, where does that take us next?
All right, let's see here. Up next, we have Life is a Dream by Leela. And Naomi, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Life is a dream. Life is a dream for awakened men to walk in it and aspire at their desires to wear flesh. A dream in which they sleepwalk up and down the hills to the valley of fruits. For some, it is a dream full and clear, like the looking glass. They can reflect their lives on heavenly. For many, it is a dream shattered like shards of broken porcelain. They who walk in it face misery from hell that stays to taunt them. End poem. Yeah, what an amazing look on life here and how, you know, life can be different from one to another, but you know, just as meaningful and as striking one way or the other. Bobby, your thoughts on Lila's poem?
I'm thinking about, and I have this annoying habit. I apologize. I tend to. My brain makes linkages to screenplays and to dialogue, and this reminds me of where some is a dream full and clear like the looking glass that can reflect their lives on heavenly. There's a rather obscure Tom Hanks film called Joe Versus the Volcano, and in the film, he finds himself going to an island to jump in a volcano, and he's while he's on the voyage, and it's on a schooner. The captain is Meg Ryan, and they're out on deck in the middle of the night. And if you've ever been on the ocean in the middle of the night, it's indescribable. And he's looking up at the sky, and he sees all the stars, and he's never seen anything like this in his life because he's lived in the city. And he makes a comment, and then the Meg Ryan character says something that I've never forgotten. She says, "My father says that most people go through their lives sound asleep, and the ones that are awake are in a constant state of total amazement." And that's what I was thinking of when I read this, a dream in which they sleepwalk up and down the hills to the valley of fruits. For some, it is a dream full and clear, like the looking glass. And for many, it's a dream shattered like shards of broken porcelain. But it's just that awareness of life for those who can grasp it and celebrate it. It's every day is a constant state of total amazement, and I think this is captured in this Life is a Dream writing.
Amazing comment there, Bobby. So true. And I love those lines that you recited there. Those were my favorite too. And Pam, your thoughts on this poem?
Yeah, this is a beautiful, right? Wonderful imagery and metaphors. I like how it has us walking through a valley of dreams, and then up and down the hills and to those fruits. And the fruits being the idea of those gifts that we are offered. I also really like and appreciate how she reminds us in the end lines that it's not the same dream for everyone. For some, it is dreams that are dark and ugly and that haunt and torment them. So beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, well done indeed. We had an awesome poetry tonight. Migration and amazing comments from everybody. And so, Pam, where are we going next?
All right. Up next, we have What You Reap by Adrian 41062. And it goes like this. I think life is one big picture, the way we dress, react at heart. We, the actors, make the difference in this masterpiece of human art. Just a smile can paint some sunshine in a life where the chips are down. Be a light that shines so brightly. Let the world see a smile. Don't frown. We are all actors in this picture, drawing strength from loving each other. Let's take this art to a higher level. Here, no strangers, just sister and brother. The art of the spirit is to make life better. So let's connect smile to smile, deep to deep. So the art of hope, happiness, and joy. Your motion picture memories are what you reap. End poem.
What a beautiful, beautiful write by Adrian here. I think life is one big picture, and then the poet ends it with happiness and joy. Your motion picture memories are what you reap. Our life is one big movie, special movie. And it really is. It is art, you know. Everything, if we take time to just enjoy every moment or look at every moment, live every moment. It is our movie, our own special movie. So, Bobby, what were your thoughts on this poem?
I'm thinking about the. I don't know which direction it goes in, but was it Art Imitates Life? And in this case, I think we are all actors in this picture, drawing strength from loving each other. Is this life imitating art? Because how many times, I'm a big fan of films, of cinema, and I tend to catalog in my brain lines that screenwriters come up with that just, to me, capture the essence of meaning of life or just that convey meaning so deeply. And as we are all actors in this picture, drawing strength from loving each other. Let's take this art to a higher level. No strangers, just brother and sister. And it does feel sometimes like if you draw, you hold the mirror up to film, that it imitates life. But if you hold the mirror up to life, it imitates some of the most memorable moments of film. Because when you live through one of those moments, you never forget it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true. Awesome comment there, Bobby. And your thoughts, Pam?
Yeah, I really like what Bobby had to say about how life imitates art or art imitates life. And, you know, to me, I like the main message in this being that, you know, that the happiness, the joy that we pass on to others, we can gather back ourselves simply by just knowing that we've made other people happier. I like how this gives me the thought that we are part of a bigger picture throughout the world. And, oh my goodness, sorry. Long day. But, you know, I like how it's all about having a positive attitude. And my favorite stanza is definitely that third stanza with the idea of embracing everyone as a potential friend, as a potential sister and brother to connect with. So beautifully written and very well done.
Oh, indeed. And Bob, and Bobby. Pam, where are you taking us next?
Well, up next we have Belvedere Apollo, I presume, by Eric Svensson. And Bobby, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Oh my gosh, you mean he hasn't given us a SoundCloud?
I asked him today too, and he had no answer back.
I will do my very best then to channel Eric and try and capture his cadence. So, me, there we go. Belvedere Apollo, I presume. And we have a quote at the beginning from Helena Bonham Carter. I think getting music in the background here somewhere. But hang on a second here. It's the gremlins in my phone doing it again. Stop it.
Well, you don't have to read the quote, Bobby. We've got quite a bit of stuff to read, so just read the quote, please.
All righty.
Thank you.
All righty. Well, I'm getting background music, and I don't know why. Here we go. There we go. Stop. There we go. Okay. Shy blue sky brokers a peace accord. After art history lecture on classical Greek statues, students lizard lounge on green lawn. Beneath the auspices of brash sun blaze. Muscled maze runner moment unfolds close by on auditorium steps. Bronzed bodybuilders sunbathe before national championships. Focused strut, stretch, each flex hyperboles. Skimpy posing trunks, outlines beg to be etched, sketched. Ideas ticker tape, surround, sound drift down. Minute perspiration drops, refract sunlight. Diamonds encrust bronze, pleasure hulls, mulled over by students from a distance. A Belvedere Apollo casually saunters over to our group. Extended fracking moment. Globule glides over studio's bedrock. Can you oil my back? Open invitation to explore antiquity's equity in modern day context. Harsh sun blush intensifies, solidifies, resolve that life is happenstance art. Ardent azure sky, blush bends down closer, eavesdrop in on an opening open air campus studio. Belvedere Apollo, a final year law student, radiates intense energy. Warrior sure, he slips down his skimpy red posing trunks. Make sure my glutes are evenly oiled, bud. A painter's hands oblige with rigorous application, so you follow the classical ideal of healthy body, mind, and spirit. Your Apollo becomes pliable putty in a sculptor's hands. Ever heard of John Banovich? The Wolf of Wall Street swings around. Rock-hard pecs push against my chest. He was one of America's top bodybuilders. Belvedere Apollo's hawk eyes blaze. Today, he's one of the world's greatest wildlife painters. Transference of energy, nature conservation is his passion. Bud, my bloodline is more lawyers, guns, and money. Ramrod manhood, exclamation mark, rears its feisty head, strains against skimpy red posing trunks to reiterate its point. Strident sun, blaze, suddenly blinks, bats between cloudy wisps. Beware the werewolves of London, bud. End of poem.
I just, it's amazing. Eric Svensson, first of all, you know, the alliteration throughout the poem, you know, it's as if he's just writing so effortlessly about this, you know, this moment in time that he captured here, you know, when he was a student in university, you know, with these trainees, these athletes. But you know, the alliteration that comes out of the poem as you know, Bobby, we could hear it, you know, as you're reading it, just those first consonants there and the sounds and the whole flow of it, you know, how it's written, just you know, masterful piece like Eric Svensson can do them. And I'm not going to take up too much time there. Time's passing, it's fleeing. Pam, what did you think of Eric Svensson's piece?
Oh, I very much enjoyed this, and great read there, Bobby. I have to say, next time Eric is oiling down muscular men, I hope he invites me to come along with him. Dang.
Yeah, right.
That sounds like quite the adventure. I thought he had wonderful, clever, and creative imagery in this. I like how he takes us into the moment, into the posing and the taking care of the physical body, and then transfers us into the present moment, where he talks about, he writes about the artist John Banovich, who, you know, once was a top bodybuilder and then began to transfer his energy, focus his energy on nature conservation and artwork. Eric did provide a link in the AN for anyone who later on wants to check out John Banovich's artwork. And I like how this speaks on the whole idea that, yeah, it's important to take care of your body. You know, there's nothing wrong with being in good shape and physically taking care of yourself, but also find out what feeds your soul, what feeds your mind and your spirit and makes you feel like you have a greater purpose in life. So wonderful, right? And very well done.
Awesome comment there, Pam. And Bobby, you read that so amazingly. What are your thoughts?
Actually, having flashbacks, because little known to the group of gentle, sedate poets is I used to be a competitive bodybuilder.
And oh, so, yeah. Cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, except after about half a dozen contests, when you're ripped to shreds and you won't place, you finally pull a judge aside and ask them why the woman who placed ahead of you, who didn't have nearly the muscularity you had, and you get informed that you're asymmetrical and you're never going to place. And you'll lose your ardor for it after a while. So here I am, the asymmetrical me. But in backstage, you're tending to one another. You're oiling up. There's just men barely. You know, it's like they're wearing dental floss. You know, it's like, oh my God. Gals are the same way because you're trying to show off your muscularity without. Without exposing yourself completely, and it's just it's an interesting environment if you've never been part of it, and he really does capture the there's a certain amount of narcissism to bodybuilding because you spend most of your time in the gym staring at yourself in the mirror. Because you're trying to get your form correct, and it just you're constantly appraising yourself. So he does capture that beautifully and irreverently, as of course only Eric Svensson. So I hope no one holds my past life against me.
But awesome comment there, Bobby. And we'll just paddle right along here, try and get a few more in. Pam, where are you taking us next?
Well, I don't know about a few, but maybe a couple. And up next we have Starry Nights by Betty Page. And Naomi, give that a read for us, please.
Yeah, Starry Nights by Betty Page. Beneath moonlit skies, kissing midst sapphire skies, bright stars shimmering, illuminating, romantic gaze between us, crashing ocean waves, our hearts drifting sweet, elevating high towards clouds, my heart's racing fast. Totally smitten, giving smiles and flirty winks, I'm filled with pure love. Your voice is sweet gold, pure magic. I get lost in rainbows at sunset. Mystical, serene Jimi Hendrix sets the mood. I entwine with you, wishing time would freeze. We could stay in that moment. Love infinitively. Oh, amazing poem by Betty Page here. I just love the way she writes. It's so concise. It's so how can you say that? Like glued together. You know, it's so compact. And you know, her writing just you know. And when you write in that style, you need to have impactful words. And, you know, and she does it in such a brilliant, brilliant way. Bobby, your thoughts on this, right?
She's done what I did in my earlier piece that I read. She's got a Senryu chain here. But actually, it almost is a haiku chain because she does speak so much of nature. Illuminating because she's talking about romance, but she's also talking about nature. Where the difference in with a haiku, it's about nature, and a senryu is about the human condition. So she's blended the two beautifully, and her execution on this is precision. I mean, she's got it. Each stanza is spot on, and the technical expertise in this, when you can, when each line can stand on its own, that's an exquisite senryu or haiku, and she's done that. Wishing time would freeze. We could stay in that moment, love infinitely. Each line that she's written is like its own poem. I've usually Betty's very romantically oriented. This is just so romantic and so exquisite. I think this is by far one of the best things she's ever written.
Mm. Yeah, it's captivating from one end to the other for sure. It's amazing. Pam, your thoughts?
I have to agree with you. This is very captivating. And you're right, Bobby, it is spot on as far as its syllable count goes, very professionally executed. And wonderful imagery throughout. I like how it's both romantic and philosophical, how it takes a look at the magic of love and of starlight and of music. I especially do like that part that mentions Jimi Hendrix, mystical, serene Jimi Hendrix sets the mood. I entwine with you. Wonderful lines, beautifully written and very well done.
Amazing comment there, Pam. And do we have time? Yeah, we have time for another poem. Where are you taking us?
All right. Up next, we have Life is Art by Rick Six. And I'll go ahead and give that one a read. And it goes like this. Okay, I get it. Life is art. The question is, what kind of art? Dance, movies, music, painting, photography, sculpture, theater, and within those categories, and certainly more, are you a romance movie where your fondest memory is making out in the back row of the theater? Maybe a chick flick, one where you started snoring loud halfway through and had to get poked in the ribs by the buttered popcorn-munching chubster sitting next to you. A comedy that perhaps isn't all that funny? Or a horror movie that still haunts your dreams? A snapshot of a sexy girl wearing only a tie? A faded pic of smiling grandma, age 99, 3 days before she kicked the bucket? Or a doodle on a grocery list that your crazy neighbor said looks exactly like his second wife? What kind of art is your life? And poem.
this is quite this is Rick. I just love the way he went all the way down. But you know, there's a profoundness to this. You know, he looks at all the sides. Okay, I get it. Life is art. What kind of art? You know, is it dance? Movies, music, painting, photography, sculpture, theater, and within these categories and certainly more, you know, what kind of movie are you? You know, what kind of movie? And he goes down. So just amazing, amazing write from Rick. You know, a longer write too than we usually see. And I really like this write. What did you think, Bobby?
You're right. This is very Rick. He has a very candid, unembellished way of expressing himself. But it's always very concise, and it always just says exactly, I think, what he wants it to say without a lot of frills or fripperies. I like the way he asked the question, what kind of art are you? A comedy, a romance film, a horror movie. It gives us so many different options. And what kind of art is your life? It's very introspective. I mean, you read it through and take it seriously, even though there is a lot of humor, good-natured humor, shot through it. The last line, what kind of art is your life, is an excellent question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to say, you know, I really enjoyed this. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, I enjoyed this one too. I liked the humor in it, but I like that it's actually, as Bobby was mentioning, a serious question up with a humorous approach. Because, you know, we have to think about what we are making out of our lives, what we are getting out of our lives and putting into it, you know, and are we that, you know, tragedy of errors, you know, are we the chick flick, the horror movie, you know, what are we getting out of life? I really liked this all the way through. It was fun to read. I did like the mention at the end of the, or a doodle on a grocery list. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And we don't have any particularly short pieces, so I figure we'll have all the rest be carryovers, and you honestly have enough carryovers to do a part two show, maybe run a small eight spot contest. But anyways, great show tonight. Wonderful topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and join us for tomorrow for the Art of Seduction. So we'll see you there tomorrow. And do you have any shows you want to add with the worst title ever? I couldn't come up with a title for that show tomorrow night, so I put Pieces of You. And then after I said, oh, my gracious, it sounds like a horror movie. It's kind of a piece. And I couldn't come up with a title.
Oh, my God.
But anyway.
Wonderful prompts. Wonderful prompts.
Yes.
Well, I would like to mention that on Thursday is Double Helix, and Dexter is running the contest for that show. They need rights, and that's the 10 p.m. show. The 12:30 a.m. show is Headliners Ball with Jeremy F.
Mm-hmm.
And he's featuring Bex Eggs and Cheese and Richard Wiseman. And absolutely. And check out all the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire.
And Pam, if you can put up that link for a Double Helix after the, you know, after the show, that would be neat. I'd like to check that out.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Bobby, you have a show too coming up?
Well, actually, we just did ours last Saturday.
Yeah.
The next one coming up this next Saturday is, I believe, is Gray. And then we are the following Saturday, and we will be quickly grab the contest. Here we go. We will be addressing the dreamlike digital images of Katrin Veldstein, and she's just got some beautiful, amazing artwork out there for anyone.
Oh yeah, I already wrote for that one, I think. Yeah.
No, you didn't. Mm. Thank you very much for that. I like your new biopic. Are you very pixie-ish looking there? You look like you're about 15 years old.
Thank you. I wish. Well, that was a great, great night, everybody. And, so thank you for joining in, everybody who called in, everybody who hung out on the board. And, so just a great rest of the week to everybody. And good night. Good night to all of you.
Buonanotte a tutti.